to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Hey, do you remember the things you learned in high school and college physics and economics and sociology courses? We learned a lot of things about the earth and the nature of reality and how we're related to other people and where we fit in relation to our world. But recent research is proving that a lot of those things are quite different than you and I were taught. The internet is showing us how interconnected we really are. Climate change is demonstrating that what we do in our work and everyday lives affects the whole world. My guest today is cosmologist Jude Kuravan, here to talk with us about how it is that we, you and me, are actually co-creators of the whole world. Welcome to Full Power Living. We're the only show on international media that regularly works to transform our world by exploring the power and importance of human emotions. I'm your host, Eileen Dillon, and we want you to join our conversation today through our chat on emotionalpro.com. And you can also call us toll-free at 888-498-0570, 888-498-0570, and those numbers are posted on the chat. Dr. Jude Kuravan is a cosmologist, and she works globally as a planetary healer, author, and futurist. She holds a PhD in archaeology from the University of Reading in the UK, and she researched ancient cosmologies, and she also has a master's degree in physics from Oxford University. Her work integrates leading-edge science, research into consciousness, and transformational and emergent resolutions to our collective planetary issues. She's the author of 5 books currently available in 15 languages in 25 countries, including Cosmos, A Co-Creator's Guide to the Whole World, which we're talking about today, that's co-authored with Irvin Laszlo, and Hope, Healing Our People and Earth. Her next book, currently in progress, is The Cosmic Hologram. Dr. Jude Kuravan, welcome to Full Power Living.
Hello, Eileen. Hello,
oh, I'm so glad to have you. Yes, thank you. Well, I've been talking with people about some of the things that I learned from your book, Cosmos, about how you start out in the beginning talking about what we know, scientifically speaking, about the world, and eventually how that, especially since maybe the mid-80s, has been slowly supporting some of the more ancient teachings that we have in various religious or spiritual traditions around the world, which I found very fascinating. What are some of the most important things that science tells us about our cosmos and our world that inform our place in the world, in the cosmos?
Well, Eileen, I think there's an emerging view of this, which is different from the mainstream view that sort of held sway on time. And I think that when we go back 100 years to the beginning of the quantum era and the era of relativity, we got clues then, but the clues essentially were discounted. And there are phenomena being discovered now or rediscovered and theories emerging now that are actually building on those original clues of 100 years ago, but they're taking them much further. It became clear that when we observed the quantum world, we actually changed it. And that was very disturbing because no longer could we stand back and say, oh, I am an observer and the world out there is separate from me. Certainly the quantum level, that was not the case. And more it's being realized that that isn't the case at any scale of experience. The other thing was something that Einstein referred to as spooky action distance, whereby quantum theory said that you should be able to create twin quantum particles, separate them by however far you chose to, not just in space, but in time too, which is even more mind-blowing. And if you actually flipped the attributes of one twin, the other would immediately. Now, that was the case without any signal passing between them, because within space and time, it was clear in relativity theory, and evidence and experiment ever since has shown that the speed of light is the fastest signal that can be sent through space-time. But these twin particles were simultaneously switching. So something, not a signal in space-time, something was connecting them. And it's now being viewed in the emerging paradigm that at a very profound level, the whole universe is what's called non-local connected. Essentially, it is a coherent whole. We can't go back to the old mainstream view of a fragmented, disjointed, unconnected universe. What's emerging, that the clues were there 100 years ago, but what's emerging now in both theory and evidence is that indeed we need to consider the whole universe as a unified entity. But more importantly still, that we cannot separate an act of observation or an act of consciousness or an act of awareness from what we call reality. So I'm sure we can talk more about that, but I'll take a breath at that point.
You know, you caught me right there at the very end. Are you talking about like an overall intelligent mind when you say separating consciousness in that way?
Well, many leading edge scientists have always perceived that, you know, beyond and beneath and behind what we call physical reality, there is some sort of causative intelligence at work. Einstein called it cosmic mind.
Mm-hmm.
And John Wheeler, a great physicist, basically said we need to start describing our physical universe as arising from a causative dimension. And more, and again, the sort of experiments and the evidence is very much pointing to this, we need to, if we're going to try and describe our universe and physical reality at a more comprehensive level than we have done so far, we need to understand that information, I'll leave consciousness to one side for a moment, but information is being shown to be more fundamental than matter and energy and indeed space and time themselves. So when we start talking about information as the most fundamental attribute that we can understand physical reality in terms of, it's a slippery slope from there to describing all that we call reality as somehow arising from essentially infinite intelligence at some level of intelligence, which, as I said, Einstein called cosmic mind.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about information, I notice in the book you write it as in-formation, and I accepted the term, but if you ask me what exactly you mean by that, I couldn't tell you. Can you tell me?
I hope so.
Good. Please tell me.
I'll try to. Well, first of all, in our normal way of speaking, we sort of equate information with data. Yeah?
Uh-huh.
It can be numerical, it can be words, it can be essentially anything. And in computer terminology, we can shake down anything, any message, one or zero. You know, we write a word as a long string of binary digits, or a number, or anything can be described in that way. And some years ago, a communication technologist called Claude Shannon understood, what he was trying to do is try to understand how much information he could actually send down a cable, because that has great economic importance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did was he came up with an equation. And it was essentially the same equation that over 100 years ago, a physicist called Ludwig Boltzmann had used to describe an attribute of systems called entropy. And entropy is the order, disorder in a system in energetic terms, yeah? But what Claude Shannon showed is that there is such a thing called information entropy, and it's the amount of information needed to encode a message in any medium, but it's the same equation. And what's now being realized is that the, if you like, the thermodynamic definition of entropy, how gases behave, how systems behave, which is a very fundamental attribute of physical reality, is actually a subset of a bigger sense of what entropy is about, which is all about information or data, and we can express all of that in binary digits or bits, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Which computers do and telecommunications do all the time. But this is much more fundamental, and it's something that we can describe the universe in terms of. But when we talk about information and data, we tend to sort of think, yeah, sure, it's what I speak to you about, or what we speak about, or a message on a computer screen. But when Irvin Laszlo and I talked about information within our book Cosmos, it was trying to sort of take it to a deeper level of saying, this is how the universe, this is how physical reality is literally in form. In other words, it creates the form that we call physical reality. Our 3D appearance of physical reality is actually arises from this information, which is actually at a more fundamental. So it's not physicalized in its own sense, but it can be energized. For example, when we're speaking, I'm sitting in my study in England. Uh-huh. I'm speaking into a microphone. That microphone is in my computer. So all the words I'm speaking are being transformed into essentially binary digits. We're scooting it over a Wi-Fi connection, an electromagnetic connection, to where you're sitting in your office in the US. And then it's being recreated as words and sounds. Yeah? But what is the information? In a sense, it's expressing itself in as energy in all these different forms. But of itself, essentially, it's supra-physical. The content of it, the intelligence of it, is supra-physical.
Wow, yes. Well, I'm having the feeling that I had when I read your book, which is that it is so chock full of information that it probably would take me 4 or 5 readings to get it all under my belt. And I appreciate that all the information is there, but there really is so much to consider. Now, one of the things that interested me, you and your co-author, Irvin Laszlo, contend that in whatever way energy, matter, space, and time are discovered to be manifested, it is clear that they do so in a way that enables the entire universe to evolve as a coherent entity.
Yes. You know, I said a little while ago that, evidence and theory are showing that we can't keep, the quantum insight to quantum scale. But instead of just quantum entities being able to sort of be connected in a way that goes beyond space and time, more and more physicists are realizing that we need to consider the whole of our universe in this way. Even more mind-blowing, they're beginning to describe our experience of three-dimensional space and time in the form of a hologram. Now, most of us are sort of familiar with a hologram, whether it's as a sort of the two-dimensional little chip on a credit card, or those of us who are the science fiction buff, going back to Star Wars and the first appearance of Princess Leia as a hologram. But we can actually mathematically describe the information that makes up our 3D universe as being information encoded on a holographic surface. So our whole universe is beginning to be described in this way. And there's actually an article on the Huffington Post today saying, shock, the universe is a hologram. But more and more, to actually try and understand, how the physical world works, this is the model that more and more leading-edge physicists are coming to describe our world.
Well, you also said that because of all this that we've been learning, we can't really separate mind from matter or body from soul or ourselves from a reality that's intrinsically integral.
Okay.
And what that says to me is that we are as important and as involved in everything as a planet or a galaxy or any other thing in the universe. Is that so? Would you agree with that?
Very much. I mean, we subtitled the book A Co-Creator's Guide to the Whole World. And the two parts of that subtitle that are key, one is co-creator, and that goes way back to, as I said, when we can no longer separate an observer from what's observed. But, you know, I heard as I was just coming in to share this with you, you talking, you know, about the intention of the heart. But, you know, we look at all the experiments that have been done with telepathy and precognition and many others, and I've experienced such reality since I was a little girl. So I've experienced the interconnectivity of the universe in this way, and how our thoughts, our emotions, and our beliefs, as many researchers have shown, can affect our perspective and our experience of reality. So co-creators is key. And the other one is this concept of the whole world, in the sense that we can't fragment our experience or our understanding of the universe, and are coming to understand that, in fact, is the old spiritual perspective, that everything is ultimately all one.
I'm curious, you've been a mystic since you were a child. One of the concepts I got in reading your book is about experience, the importance of experience, and how that makes things more coherent, if I understood it correctly, as we go along. In that case, how is it that one person can be connected mystically at a very young age and other people not at all, and other people later in life? Do we have any idea of what the mechanism is there?
Well, I think there's two things about. The first is that for me, all that we call reality, essentially consciousness, exploring itself, expressing itself as energy and exploring itself on many, many different levels of awareness and self-awareness. The second goes back to the unity of all things, that everything is ultimately interconnected. But my perspective is that when we come into incarnation as a human being, one of the things that goes with this territory is a sense of personal self, if you like, an ego. You know, one of the jobs, perhaps, we could think of as our ego-based mind is to persuade us that we are separate from each other, because then we can literally explore what it means to be human, mm-hmm. how to relate to others, how to relate to what appears to be an outer world. But sometimes we persuade ourselves too convincingly of that. And our society, our Western society, far more so than Eastern societies or ancient societies, is very good at trying to persuade us that we are separate. This material reality is all there is. So our society, to a great extent, closed down what many other societies never have, which is this ongoing perception and experience of a much more integrated, much more interconnected cosmos. You know, we do it to our kids.
Mm-hmm.
I was very fortunate, because when I had those experiences as a child, which I do feel most kids have,
mm-hmm.
I didn't share it with anyone. So I had nobody telling me that I hadn't experienced what I was experiencing. Yeah, I had nobody tell me I was stupid or it was imaginary or whatever. And as I continued to have those experiences, what was wonderful and what I really did ask for is that they were validated. So if I had a telepathic experience, I asked that it somehow be validated, confirmed, so I could show myself as a budding scientist as well as a mystic that it wasn't just imagination. And direct experience, of course, is so important, because when we do have an experience, there is so much more opportunity to really have a breakthrough into a wider, more expanded sense of reality, and that's what I had. And so I think that it is who we really are.
Mm-hmm.
But often we sort of, in a way, dismember our psyche when we come onto this earth plane, and some folks remember and some folks don't. And some folks do come with a very clear connection with this all-oneness of reality, rather like coming with a gift for music or a gift for art. You know, they're able to be more sensitive to that connectivity. But in many instances, and sometimes it's an event in a life journey that offers us that breakthrough. But my perspective is that our consciousness is vastly more
than this little part of us that is walking our earth walk. And so in many different ways and for many different reasons and in many different circumstances, our connectivity, our innate connection can be remembered.
Mm-hmm. My idea has been that we are separate when we're children, but then there's a tendency that we want to come back together with people as we get older, which is sort of what our idea about pairing up and having a family and so forth is all about, and that we need the experience, as you say, of being separate so we can have experiences and move ourselves forward. Once we're clear about who we are separate from others, then there's a natural tendency for us to come back together.
I agree with you. Going back to the sort of sense of a personal sense of self when we come into incarnation, when we're born and we grow. And there is, I agree with you, I think as child develops, there is that need to have that sense of self. But often, I talk about a journey from loneliness to aloneness to all oneness. And sometimes, when we're in early childhood, that sense of separation, that sense of personal self, often comes in a very harsh way when a child is essentially feels lonely rather than alone. And the aloneness is feeling that sense of self, but still knowing that connectivity with the cosmos, with spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suppose as parents and children, it's how do we support a child to have the sense of that continuing remaining understanding, which I think children do naturally bring in, that there's all oneness, that there are ultimately no barriers or boundaries, but then how to find their feet, as it were, in a sense of self, in a healthy way, without losing that connectivity and therefore actually feeling a sense of loneliness rather than a sense of aloneness.
Yeah, it's quite a challenge, I find, and now I'm watching my grandchildren come up and struggle with some of those things. It seems like the kind of thing that you were able to do, which is to protect, if you will, or keep that part of yourself away from others who might interfere with your own internal process, is one of the best things that we could do, other than have somebody who totally supports you in going through that.
So I have to say that in retrospect, and I certainly look at my own stepkids, and I look at my own grandniece and my nephew and niece who are bringing her up, and she is very clearly connected, and they're bringing her up in a way that is open to her remembering that, mm-hmm. at the same time as helping her to stand on her feet and enjoy being in human form. So, you know, their openness to her having those sort of experiences and giving credibility to those experiences and not denying them, saying, oh, just your imagination, or shutting them down. You know, they're listening to her, they're supporting her at the same time as helping her to realize that, yes, that's part of who she is, but a very big part of who she is at the moment is a toddler.
Right.
Who's you know, learning to explore this wonderful physical world of ours.
Yes, my son is now 36, and we supported him as he was growing up to the point where people in the family would go and ask him for his insights even when he was 5. He had so much to share. And he never lost it. You know, he has great confidence in himself and being able to connect with others and also to connect with knowledge that is available to him that, unfortunately, many people don't believe is available to them.
And I agree with you. That is wonderful. And I feel that if we can parent our children and help our children parent their children in that way, that brings, you know, forward a person who is comfortable with this expanded sense of awareness. They can, you know, I describe it as the ordinary and the extraordinary, and integrating the two. And a friend, a Texan friend of mine, once showed me that to spell integrate, not as I-N-T-E-G-R-A-T-E, but into great. In other words, when we can do that, as your son does, it's greater than some of the parts. You know, we can live an ordinary life in an extraordinary way, and we can have extraordinary experiences that actually we feel are ordinary. We're not complacent about that. They become our ordinary experience.
I'm taking us off a little bit, but I'm very interested in that because as a therapist, I've seen way too many people have to spend way too much of their lives as adults trying to find themselves when, as you stated, they already had themselves when they arrived, you know? And yeah. I'd like to cut some of that wandering down.
I agree. And that when I was doing one-on-one work, you know, healing work with people, and now I work on a planetary collective level of healing because we all need this. Absolutely agree with you. I talk about a process of literally remembering. It's not that intellectual remembering that we often talk about. It literally is a remember. We've dismembered our psyche by limiting ourselves and closing ourselves down to those realities, those expanded perceptions. And as you say, many folks take a long journey, and some never do, to literally remember the wholeness of who they really are.
Well, I noticed through this radio program, people are beginning to write and bring into our conscious awareness that these things are possible for us, that there is a lot more to us than we have heretofore been allowing ourselves. And that leads into the discussion that is very big in your book, Cosmos, which is that we human beings are co-creators of our worlds. Let's talk about that for a little bit. What do you mean we're co-creators, and how do you get there?
Well, for a long time, you know, the view was that we are created, that there is somehow a creator, however we might want to describe that. And right at the beginning, we talked about Einstein's view of cosmos, which I perceive and experience. But in a way, when we talk about being created, it's a very passive perspective. And when the quantum revolution came along, and I mentioned earlier about no longer being able to separate observer from the observed, in other words, when we observe something, the experiments were showing that we changed it. And over time, understanding that that isn't just at the quantum scale, that it's never larger scale, and more experimentation showing that our thoughts and our emotions and our beliefs actually affect our biology and affect our experience of reality. You know, we talk about seeing is believing, but actually when we turn it on our head, it is believing is seeing, because when we believe something is possible or likely or of a reality, very often we will find or we'll experience it. So I think over the last 20 years, this sort of term co-creator or co-creativity or co-creation has come to describe that interplay between, if you like, a cosmic mind, you know, and us as microcosms of that cosmic mind. Self-aware microcosms of cosmic mind that are playing out and exploring and experiencing and evolving what it is to be conscious, what it is to be human, what it is to play a role in this unfolding cosmos.
Many years ago, I was listening to a recording. It was a channeled recording, and the person was saying that love was the energy that supported all creation. And love was described as a totally supportive energy. So as I was thinking about it, I thought, well, if love supports everything, what is there left for humans to do? And my conclusion was that we humans have the job of focusing our attention where we choose to place it. And that we have to choose where we're placing our attention, or really wherever we place our attention gets supported, but to co-create, we have to consciously choose. I wanted to get your comment on that.
I feel very resonant with that. What I would say, though, is in my experience of literally walking between worlds for nearly 60 years, is there many different levels of perception, as you know from your work. some we are very, if you like, conscious of, as we're conscious of having this conversation. Some of them are below the radar, some of them are subconscious, some of them are super conscious. They go beyond our persona, our personal sense of self, and our transpersonal. I would describe the wholeness of cosmic mind as playing out on many different levels, on unitary levels and on archetypal and collective and personal levels. But I'd widen the area in which we're exploring. In that sense, we explore in dream state, we experience subconsciously. You know, our bodies have automotive reactions and responses to circumstances. We are self-aware and conscious of certain things we do, but our consciousness is more than that. So very much I agree with you, but I would just expand the remit to cover all those aspects. And I would certainly, wholeheartedly agree with that perspective, that ultimately cosmic mind is love. Cosmic mind, consciousness, expressing itself as energy, essentially love joins, love connects, love is the highest vibration. And for me, if you like, the duality, the dual end of the spectrum of love is here. And I feel as human beings, without judgment, when we come into this personal experience of self, we're playing those, if you like, those mirrored dualities of love and fear. And through our choices, can actually be more coherent with choices of love or less coherent with choices of fear.
Yes, that has been a big learning on my part, to learn that when I get into fear, I have a choice of not being in fear. And for me, I've chosen the word faith. Some people like trust, but to realize that I can also look at the possibility that things will work out. And if I focus there and make my choices from that place, my life is very different. And you talk about that in the book, how if you focus on love and compassion instead of fear, you actually live a different life.
You literally do. And you know, there's experiments that are being undertaken to really evidence that. I'm a dowser as well. And sometimes in past workshops, we've chosen someone to volunteer and shown how our aura, our energy field, just opens up and expands 2 to 3 times its level when we're feeling love, or other people are offering us love, than when we feel fear. Literally, fear contracts us, love expands us.
You know, just yesterday, I can't remember where I was talking with somebody who looked at me and said, you know, you're totally full of love. It's really wonderful to be in your presence. And I said, oh, that's good to hear, because I wasn't always. And realized that maybe 20, 25 years ago, I made a decision to focus on love. Mm-hmm. And I assume then that it takes a period of time of practicing to develop patterns that are discernible to others.
I agree. I mean, you know, we could talk about patterns, and we could end up talking about fractals and all of it for a very long time. And, you know, the fractal holographic model of the universe, of the cosmos, is certainly the one that is emerging now. It is based on information and consciousness. But you're absolutely right. I shall use the bland term, but it is a journey. Because when we come into this world, this life, this human experience, you know, we start playing out patterns. And the more our experience, is reflected in those patterns, the deeper those patterns get. And you certainly know with your work, as I do with mine, that sometimes patterns are very hard to change. But the first step, perhaps, doing that is to acknowledge that we are playing out certain patterns. The second is perhaps to take responsibility for our choices around those patterns. And then the subsequent steps are to literally, day by day, step by step, when we do feel that we're, you know, falling back into old patterns that don't support us, that are unhealthy, that we consciously choose to make different choices. And like you, for me, it comes down to, is it a choice of fear or is it a choice of love?
Well, you know, I'd have a little bit of challenge with you on whether patterns are really hard to change, because I've learned with myself, when I actually make a decision, when I fully make a decision to change a pattern, it can actually be changed in an instant.
I agree. The tricky bit is the denial.
And the resistance, yes, I guess, is denial.
Absolutely. I call it swimming in the river in Egypt, denial. sorry for that. But you're absolutely right. When we make the decision, when we make that conscious choice at the very core of our being, that change can happen in a moment, in a split second. But it's actually the process that leads to that choice, that leads to that authentic choice. It's not the lip service to the choice, or the maybe I will, maybe I won't choice, or the
right.
excuse, oh, somebody,
or I'll try.
Or it's somebody else's fault, or actually, you know, getting back into the river in Egypt, I don't have that problem. I don't need to make any changes. So
right.
I agree wholeheartedly, once we get to that place of authentic, real choice, then it can happen in a moment. It's a long journey to that point sometimes. Sorry, no, I agree with you too. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be at all a long journey, but often it is for folks.
Well, one of the things, you know, when you talk in terms of being co-creators of the universe, the way that I have looked at things now for maybe 35 years as a therapist is that our Earth is a giant school and we come here in order to learn. And when you embrace that concept, then everything that comes up, and you talk about this in Cosmos too, everything that comes up is an opportunity to learn something. The minute you learn it, you're done with it. You don't have to keep doing it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And once you start on this path of embracing every change that comes your way to the best of your ability, then it becomes easier and faster. And it
Definitely.
Seems a lot like the way you're describing how the universe works.
Very much. Very much. And, you know, I do agree we're here to learn, and we're here to co-create, and we're here to experience, and we're here to explore. But when we can embrace all of that, you're absolutely right, and certainly in my experience and working with many thousands of people too, every experience is an opportunity to learn. And, you know, we'll go around the houses perhaps a while until we do learn, and then when we learn, we can move on to the next adventure, to the next experience, to the next way of embracing life. I feel that that's such an important step, though, to make that decision, to make that choice, to embrace life and embrace those experiences and be willing to learn. And I suppose the other thing that I'm sure you've understood and experienced and shared with others is that, you know, everything has its purpose. And when we can perhaps trust or have faith, even when we may not be able to understand the purpose of something, to have faith that it does have that higher purpose, and it ultimately supports our good, it ultimately supports our learning and our growth.
And the idea that I often run into, particularly associated with Eastern philosophies, is that we're bound to suffer as human beings. That can get taken away too, as we were talking about earlier. It's the resistance and the denial that leads to our suffering. When we instead embrace what you're calling the idea of co-creating, when we're saying, look, I'm creating my life, and so I'm going to pay attention to what I want to become here, and I'm not going to be sitting in this morass of fear or anything associated there, then everything is, you're just soaring. You're just having a wonderful time. You're having a wonderful experience, which is my guess. That's what we're set up to do, is to have a wonderful time while we're here on the earth.
Absolutely. And I love that you're saying when we're here on this earth, because I agree with that. It's not a question of us floating off somewhere else. My sense is that a great teacher such as Jesus and Buddha were really saying, you know, this is where you can achieve and live and embody unconditional love. This is where you can transcend suffering. Because as you say, suffering, in my experience too, is when we live our lives in fear. Then we can liberate ourselves from that and show up to being co-creators, we do liberate ourselves, we do free ourselves. And more my experience has been that we literally become that love that Jesus spoke of. And we do so in our human experience. It really isn't about floating off or somehow, you know, when we pass over, that's when we'll get enlightenment. For me, there is the potential of enlightenment in living an ordinary, extraordinary human life. And we're all able to do that.
So one of the things you say that your mission is to encourage people to come into conscious coherence with each other and with the cosmos, because you see that as our next step in our evolution. Let's end the show with talking a bit about that, please.
To share and to help people find that courage within themselves. And courage is actually formed from a French word, or the cœur is the French for heart. So for me, courage is the bravery of the heart. Some of what I do or what I aim to do is to encourage, help people find their own bravery of the heart to walk this journey that we've been talking about, to empower themselves and to inspire themselves and to choose love in their lives. And I suppose this is a time in my perspective, and it's not just mine, of course, many, many mystics and teachers and folks who are opening up to this are appreciating, I think, that this is a great potential moment for a shift, an evolution in human consciousness and our collective consciousness. And that involves us, if you like, waking up, expanding our own individual personal awareness. And it involves us coming together to support each other in this. And then it involves us, therefore, on a collective level. Because, of course, if we, if we subscribe to the worldview we've been describing, that we are all innately interconnected. And our collective consciousness is actually evolving, as well as doing so on personal individual levels.
Yes, and I was encouraged. It seemed to me the way I understood what you were writing about, this evolution is part of how the system works, can't really avoid evolving.
One of the emerging perspectives that I'm writing about in my next book is of universal cycles, and beginning, if you like, with a moment that we would call the Big Bang, but the way the universe is formed enables, and this holographic perspective, enables more and more awareness, more and more information, more and more consciousness, more and more complexity to be evolved and explored through a universal cycle of what we call space-time. So definitely I feel that, you know, cosmic mind, we, all of it, has, if you like, co-created the perfect playground for that exploration to take place, and us as microcosms of cosmic mind to, you know, come into human form, part of our, divine intelligence come into human form at this moment in that evolutionary process to explore and to learn and to grow and be an innate part of that.
Well, there is so much we could talk about here, Jude. but I've really enjoyed our conversation today. Thank you so much for accepting my invitation. And I also look forward to the release of your next book, which you're calling The Cosmic Hologram. And I want to invite you, please, to come back and talk with us when you're ready to release that one, because I really enjoy I enjoy your ideas, and I enjoy the topic also, so let's do it some more.
That will be great, Heidi. I'll be delighted to. And thanks again for this invite, and I'll be sure to let you know when the Cosmic Hologram is ready. We can have fun and explore some more with the folks.
That's wonderful. So next week, in deference to the holiday season, we're not having a show. We expect a lot of you are going to be doing last-minute Christmas shopping. I probably will be. But on December 26th, we've put together a fascinating show for you that features Amy Newmark, who's editor of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series and leader of the Chicken Soup for the Soul empire, along with her husband. So you'll be fascinated to learn how the series got started, where it's going in this coming year, and you can even find out how to submit your own story for consideration by the publisher. We are ending our year of 2013 considering possibilities, so be sure to join me for that show. That's Thursday, December 26th at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. Paul, Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer. Thank you, Paul, for your work and your support. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.